Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This episode was brought to you by Sudio Headphones. Sudio is trying to bridge that gap between awesome tech device with amazing sound, but that might be a little bulky, and that snazzy accessory that might not have the best sound. Basically, a minimalistic and fashionable design with emphasis on audio quality, which would compete with the highest rated headphones on the market, but at a much more reasonable cost. They let me pick out a pair. I chose the Vaza, and I can vouch for them. Great rich sound where you can really pick out the details of music. And Sudio's a cool company, Swedish sleek Scandinavian design. They ship for free anywhere in the world. Plus, if you enter Alchemy as a discount code on their website, not only do you get a 15% discount, but that also lets them know that I sent you, and that helps this show. So give the site a look, sudiosweden.com. The Bluetooth headset batteries last over 24 hours of active use, much better than my previous headphones, or a full week in standby mode. And they really do sound as good as they look. That code was Alchemy at sudiosweden.com. Yeah.
So, good evening and welcome to the History of Germany podcast. I'm Judith Strusenberg.
And I'm Travis Dow.
So from where we left off last time, and for a quick summary of where we are. Where are we, Travis? We had Henry IV.
There was a German Kaiser and a Pope in Rome, and there was trouble between them. Okay, oh, I'm sorry. That was the last 10 episodes.
That was the investiture controversy.
Even before that, but this is exactly, we are at the height of the investiture controversy. Last episode was Henry IV, and now in the last episode we mentioned he had a son, which is now
the king, which went to Canossa in the winter in a hair shirt. I think
that,
you
that
all
guy.
Remember
the hair,
and
the hair shirt
yes,
guy.
Yeah. And now we talk about this son, the fifth and last Henry for a while. Yes.
The last Henry for a while.
We should
say right at the beginning, this is the last episode of the Salia dynasty, the Salian dynasty mini-series also. Not necessarily the mini-series, but this is the last Salian ruler this episode. Watch out. Interesting times are ahead.
Henry was the fifth was crowned a king in January 1099 in Aachen. He was as his father just a kid, because he never should have been king, because his older brother Conrad should have been king. He was crowned, but then he left his father's party and was with the rebels, with the party of the Pope. Yeah. So his younger brother, Henry, was crowned, and Henry took an oath to take no part in business of the empire during his father's lifetime. But as his brother, he was induced by his father's enemies to revolt in 1104. What?
Yeah, I wonder how that... How? No, well, so Henry V was really only crowned king because his brother was revolting. And it only took him 5 years until he also revolted. So this was the time... So just a couple years before, there was not just popes and anti-popes. There was the Pope. So the anti-pope was often the Pope that was named Pope by the German Kaiser so that he would be loyal. But this was also the time of king and anti-king. So there was more than one king. Remember,
from the last episode, Henry IV was not popular. He was fighting everybody, kind of, and especially the popes, though, but also other nobility. So nobility were backing and electing other kings. This happened, and then, so, this, just to show how bad it was with Henry IV, it wasn't just Conrad that was fighting his father, it was also Henry V fighting his father, and just 6 years after his coronation, we see them face off across the river, just one example, I guess, but across the river, Reagan, father and son, head of an army, same as what happened to his brother Conrad, and it didn't actually come to a battle. They finally came to an arrangement on Christmas of 1105 at a diet, kind of a court in Mainz.
They wanted to come, but Henry V trapped his father.
I think so. Now, I wonder if Henry V was a good Henry IV. I wonder if he was a good actor. Because instead of actually having a battle across the Reagan River, there was a big show of reconciliation and Henry IV crying and blah, and, you know, they're hugging and everything. And
Henry V, who was to overdue his father.
And Henry V dismissed his armies. Now, was a trick. Wait. So Henry IV was a... We had this discussion in the last episode. Was he tricking the Pope? What was the historic accuracy when he did the Gang to Canossa, the walk to Canossa in the hair shirt? Was that a political move? Was it sneaky and tricky, or was it honest and humble? And now we see Henry V, you know, in tears and hugging his father and dismissing his army. But that was a trap. I think we also discussed in the last episode. He promised his father protection in Castle Böckelheim, but yeah, he was captured on the way and spent Christmas in the dungeon. And we're recording this on the 23rd of December, so that's kind of this is a fitting Christmas episode, I guess. Henry IV in chains in the dungeon.
Very special Christmas episode. He was kind of punished while he was in prison, who renounced his reign a few days later, and
it's like that means he was tortured horribly for days until he, because Henry IV did not give up his reign easily. I mean, he fought so hard against Saxons, against the Pope, against everybody, against Rudolf, and you know, and now his son has him tortured until, he basically resigns.
Handed over the imperial insignia to his son.
That's basically it for Henry IV. He could no longer be dangerous to his son. He was a broken, broken man. We said in the last episode he died when he was, like, 56. He was crowned when he was 6 years old, so nominally... He ruled for 50 years, but, you know, then we know he was kidnapped. But he ruled from a young age, like when he was 18 or something, as a teenager. But he was killed, or he died when he was 56 now. Yeah, that was in 1106 in Liège, where he was initially buried. Now, when he died, he was still excommunicated. We're going to now see Henry V actually fight for... to the new pope for his dad's right to be, well, to be exonerated, and then for him to be buried in Speyer, because Speyer is a cathedral. You can't be buried in a cathedral if you're excommunicated. Henry IV, if you remember, was excommunicated a couple times, like three times, something like that. So his body was moved a couple times is the point, but finally... he was laid to rest in the Speyer Dome, the Speyer Cathedral, and the Speyer Cathedral will be its own episode in a couple episodes, the one after next, I believe. And now we have a pretty young Henry V ruling alone as the King of Germany. And at first, unlike his father... with the consensus of the princes. If you remember, Henry IV had to fight everybody all the time, immediately, and for decades, all the time. Like Saxony, the Slavs, the Saxons, the Italians,
Italy, the Pope,
the Romans separately. You know, when I tell you the Italians, there's the Romans, and then there's like the Florentines or the Northern Italians, all of those all the time. And now Henry V, because he was already fighting his unpopular father, he is now kind of the hero that everybody likes at first. spoiler alert, but yeah, so he's with good relations with the Saxons. Everybody nominally likes him. Remember, he's fighting his father because of the Pope, so he's even getting along with the Pope right now. So is it, so it's all gravy. So far so good, right? Everything's just hunky-dory for Henry. Right.
So almost. By the fall of his father, the rule in Italy has suffered greatly. There were no issued records of Italian recipients for a while, for more than a year. So Henry traveled to Italy to show himself there and to see how things were going. So what happened next?
Yeah, basically, I think there's just a lack of sources from 1095 to 1110. What a lack of sources kind of tell us is that there was hardly any representatives from northern Italian cities like Milan. Milan was very independent during the reign of Henry IV. So Henry V, if he wanted to, you know, it's a economically rich part of the empire. So if he wanted to keep getting taxes and keep ruling northern Italy, he had to basically go down there. That was the one thing. The other thing, the investiture controversy is still happening. Henry V, we do see from records that he was instating bishops, and the Pope did not like this. So the Pope didn't like that with Henry IV, and so kind of induced Henry V to fight his father because it was part of the investiture controversy. Remember, Henry IV died excommunicated, okay? But his son, Henry V, was still giving the rings of, you know, to bishops, naming them bishops and you know, giving them the symbolic power, like a very worldly power, to, you know, kind of get tithes and taxes and income and all that, which the Pope didn't like. So that was the whole investiture. Again, we define this every episode for the last five episodes. Investiture is the right to create bishops, to name bishops. And popes wanted this. So finally, 1011, Henry needs to actually go down to Italy at the head of an army. That's the, well, for the first, yeah. For the first time in his life, yeah. And I would say,
August.
Yeah, it's not. This is when things start to go bad, maybe. I don't want to, like, spoiler too much, but it seems like everybody likes Henry V, but we're about to see. Maybe not.
Maybe. First, things were running great. In August 1110, Henry's court took the decision to leave for Rome, and with the goal to end the controversy.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yes? A fine thing. One good thing.
I like that idea.
Yeah, I think he did too. So they went there with a great, mighty army. It should have been 30,000 knights from all over the empire.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a second army, which was led by Duke Valf V of Bavaria. It is a funny story because Henry IV could not pass northern Italy because he was in a fight with Matilda of Tuscany. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Welf was married with her for a while. And so they had no trouble to pass northern Italy to reach Rome to see the Pope there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's significant. Every time when you say a united German army, that doesn't always happen. Henry the Fourth would not have gotten Bavarians to fight for him, or Swabians. So that just shows that, yep, Henry the Fifth started his reign beloved, and he was able to get, you know, that means Franks, Saxons, Swabians, and who am I forgetting? The fourth one, to get together and all march down to Italy. His father couldn't do that, so yeah.
The Pope was seeing this and was thinking like, whoa, 30,000 knights, not that fine. He sought support from the Normans, who ruled in southern Italy that time, and as well from the Roman nobility. However, the Pope made no attempt to gain any support from northern Italy cities, although these cities began to escape the excess of the empire and get more free. And we have Henry hiding to Rome. And from this point, it's, one could say, one blow after the other.
Yeah. Yes. So, okay. Yeah. It's almost like, yay, we have a new Kaiser, and here's the beginning of the end already. So everybody loves Henry, okay? Now, the first thing that Henry wants to do, and the first thing we want Henry to do, is to end the investiture controversy.
Yay!
Yay! So he goes to Rome, and he talks to the Pope, and the Pope wants him to give up. So the Pope wants Henry to agree to give up all the bishops in the Holy Roman Empire give up their secular right, which is a lot of power for the bishops, by the way. And the bishops only then have an ecclesiastical role, meaning they're like bishops in a modern sense. So remember, bishops are basically nobility with, you know, that owned land and got money and even, you know, were powerful. They ran villages and had people and got taxes and tithes and everything. Could lead armies, okay? Bishops led armies, all right? So don't forget that. And the Pope wants him to give, for them to give that up. And Henry says, okay, now, cool. So he's in Rome. And then, so the Pope's happy. This is the end of the investiture controversy. And they're about to get crowned emperor of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yes.
And everything's happy and good, except Ert. You need to we need a record scratch Ert stop sound, because meanwhile, while this is happening, the bishops in Germany find out about the agreement and instantly revolt.
The bishop, yes.
Or even
during the coronation.
Like in the coronation, they revolt, and the parties and the festivities has to stop, and the coronation is paused, basically. And
Henry was really pissed off.
Yeah, and so Henry, now with the pressure of the bishops, demanded that they renegotiate the investiture agreement with the Pope. The Pope,
yes,
it's a done deal, it's signed, he refused, and Henry arrests the Pope and takes him prisoner in St. Peter's, which is in the Vatican in Rome today. That's not good. I don't know. I don't know if you know this, but that's a bad thing. So that's not good. So that's why I said this is the beginning of the end. So already, just immediately, now the Pope is angry and against him, and the bishops are angry and against him.
And the nobility is angry because you can't arrest the Pope.
That's right. He's at risk of being excommunicated himself, just like his father. He basically instantly turned into his father somehow. Just, wow. Yeah, it just instantly kind of did every mistake he could make in a way.
Okay. He forced the Pope to make him emperor, to crown him 2 months later. And he had to promise that he won't excommunicate Henry. Henry learned something from the...
He did learn from his dad, yeah.
Yes, of course. And the Pope did not excommunicate him, but some of his people did.
Yeah.
In summer 11, yeah. And in September 11-12, he was excommunicated for the first time. One could say the consensus from the beginning, and it was gone. He was excommunicated by the later Pope Calixtus II.
Yeah, so nice try. He's still excommunicated. There's other drama against archbishops in Germany. Like, for instance, there's another example of his closest confidant until 1111 was Adalbert, the Archbishop of Mainz.
Yes.
He went down to Italy with him, for instance, and, you know, this kind of ended. And the Archbishop was captured and held in prison for 3 years. This was, so I don't want to go into, like, waste too much time on all these details, but basically the bishopric, the bishops turned against Henry. And part of, to complicate this, it wasn't just about, or to give an example of really what this meant was, because the reason that, you know, why would he lock up his closest confidant, really? And the thing is that for generations now, the bishoprics are intertwined with the Salian dynasty themselves. And like who owns land, who owns, you know, who has what rights in the cities are kind of blurred. And Adalbert, the Bishop of Mainz, Archbishop of Mainz, was one of those examples where some of the lands were maybe kind of doubly held by the emperor and the archbishop. So if the emperor just said, well, this is mine now, then that was going against the... It's just a complicated thing. And, you know, long story short, he locked up his longtime confidant, which, yeah, for three... I mean, that's horrible. This was before human rights, so they just, you know, throwing somebody in a dungeon, it's a bad time.
Not even then he was allowed to do this. He should have talked to the nobility, but he did not. This shows how, yeah, he reigns like his father without consents now.
That's right. Maybe if he would have, yeah, if he would have discussed this move with the nobility first. But the nobility might have said no, because why would they want the emperor to have more land? I mean, yeah, yes. It's very political, so it's not so easy. It's hard to say what he should have done. But yeah, this was, you know, locking up the Archbishop of Mainz, a very powerful member of the church, period.
Yes.
That, yeah, nobility didn't like that. So he managed to make everybody angry, just like his father.
So Adalbert became a great antagonist of the Salians, and property disputes also led to conflicts in Saxony. Once again, we've heard this last episode with Henry IV. And yeah, so things turned really worse. And at this time, he managed to marry. He married Matilda from England on January the 7th in 1114 in Mainz with the greatest splendor, big party.
That's while the archbishop is in jail? Let's see. 15, yeah. Boy, what a mean thing to do. Yeah, anyways, so in Mainz, the Archbishop of Mainz is in jail. There's a huge celebration, yeah.
And Adalbert got company, I don't know if exactly, but during the wedding ceremony, Henry V had Count Ludwig of Thuringia arrested for his involvement in the Saxon opposition. And, yeah.
Yeah.
During his wedding ceremony. What the?
I'm trying so hard not to make a Game of Thrones reference, but...
Okay. I'll do it.
Because everybody dies. No. So, actually, Henry should have killed everybody. He should have gone full Game of Thrones, murder everybody at the wedding, and be done with it. Because he didn't do that. He arrests one of the nobility. He arrests Ludwig of Thuringia, and This is a scandal, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, this is not allowed. Yes. And... Because at a wedding, you know, it's an unspoken, you know, it's diplomatic immunity. You it's just like at a Hoftalk, at a diet, at a court. When you invite people to the court, the safety of those people is assumed. So this was a trap. This is a trick. This is breaking their trust. And the other nobility don't like that. And they use, but they're all together in the same room at the wedding. So they use this opportunity to conspire against Henry V. Henry V, yes, is quickly, basically now, Henry V has turned into his father. The nobility hate him. He's excommunicated all the time. He's, you know, he has archbishops in prison. He rules alone. No, everybody hates him now, basically. This is exactly, so the wedding goes badly, but he makes quite a bit of money from the dowry of Matilda. Is the daughter of King Henry I of England. Is he the son or grandson of William the Conqueror? I think grandson? We don't care. That's not history of Germany. But it's only a generation or two since the Normans conquered England from the Anglo-Saxon kings. So this is pretty new. This is a new dynasty in England, and this is actually prestigious for the British, for the English king.
Yes.
Henry. Yeah. So he gets, you know, he marries the emperor's daughter. Hey, look at him. It's also kind of neat because I think it's interesting as a history nerd because the emperor is asking against... the Pope is asking against the emperor. He asks for the help of the Normans ruling southern Italy, you know, here and there. He asks them for help against the Kaiser. And meanwhile, he's marrying the daughter of a different Norman ruler in England. So, you know, these Norman kingdoms are independent of each other. They're not the same Norman king anymore. And we see this here that, yeah, you can marry the daughter of one while fighting the Normans of another. And interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's
there is a real young woman.
Already
a girl.
I think he was only 8 when he was engaged, and now the...
No, she was 8.
Oh, she was when
they engaged in 1108.
Gotcha, okay. Oh, so this is only like, six years later?
Yeah, she's 14 at her wedding day. Yeah, not the happiest party to be here.
No, and in fact, war breaks, or well, another revolt breaks out immediately after this, too. Again, Saxons. The Cologne Archbishop unites an opposition, rebels, I guess. There's kind of a civil war. So Henry has to invade Cologne twice and fails. There is, he's already now fighting. Well, okay, I'll give you, there's one interesting thing here why this is important. He fights a nobleman, a Saxon nobleman named Lothar. And this Lothar, well, the next episode of the History of Germany podcast is called Lothar the Third. All right. This Lothar of House Supplinburg is fighting Henry. And it might be important that he's a Saxon duke, and that he's against Henry V, that might be important next episode. So this is not, and there's another couple of guys fighting Henry with Lothar III. And they're from the Staufen house, and they come from a castle that's on a hill called Hohenstaufen, which might be important in the next couple episodes, which is somewhere in Swabia. Those are Swabian dukes. You know, I just, I don't know. Maybe that's important. But for right now, they're all fighting Henry V. That's the important
thing. And maybe it will be important too that an Adalbert had his, I don't know, in German you would say, er hatte seine Finger im Spiel. He was...
pulling the strings of,
Against Henry V. Yes.
Still locked up somewhere. Now he gets let free. 11:15. Yeah. So he was still. Yeah. He was writing letters, sending ravens like in Game of Thrones.
This was the second Game of Thrones mention.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
At least I don't mention Dungeons and Dragons anymore.
So
Adalbert of Mainz rolled a 20-sided dice and got a critical success.
Oh, great. We should do a roleplay episode.
Yeah, the thing is, okay, so everybody hates Henry. What do you do? What do the Henrys do when everybody hates you? Invade Italy.
Once more, yes.
I think that's the, yeah. So again, there's Matilda of Tuscany dies. That was the Duke of Bavaria's wife that he had problems with. She dies. There's kind of a power vacuum in northern Italy. So he needs to go and take care of that. 1116. What do we want to say about this? I guess, he's leaving and there's still nothing secure in Germany. So while he's gone, Frederick II, Conrad, these Stauffer, that's going to be the next miniseries. Okay, spoiler. The next miniseries is called the Hohenstaufen or Stauffer Dynasty. So that's happening while Henry leaves. They kind of they're looting the place. A couple years later, while Henry's in Italy, we get a new pope, the old pope, Paschalis.
Paschalis died, yes. Yeah. And we got Gregory the VIII as new pope.
Yeah, this is, he is from Portugal. He's a Portuguese pope, actually, from a just emerging Portugal from Braga at that time was kind of the biggest city, kind of like the capital in Portugal. Now... These days, we would call him anti-pope, Gregory the Eighth.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Because there was a second pope elected.
Right.
It was Gelasius II. And, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's just a continuation of... We don't want to get too confusing, but yeah, there was always one pope that kind of... Because it's just like the political parties. One pope that supported the emperor, one pope that was against the emperor... And it could be that they were for the Byzantines. It could be that they were for the French. You know, the Germans had many enemies, different enemies at different times. Because no one likes Germans, Judit.
I'm pretty sorry.
I'm kidding. Jeez, everybody likes German chocolate. everybody likes German beer. Anyway, okay. So
make it worse. Nobody likes us.
The thing is, the emperor doesn't have that much time to waste in Italy. He's there for like 3 years altogether. But news gets to Henry that the nobility is conspiring against him in Würzburg. And he needs to get back across the Alps and do something about it. So
yes, they wanted to get rid of him if he would stay away longer. So it was, he had really to hurry to come home.
In fact, records of Henry start to become less and less because he's just not that important in the day-to-day running of the, it's just crazy. He's just in Italy kind of being forgotten about. Except for one thing. Do you guys remember that, maybe we mentioned the thing called investiture controversy now and then, once or twice in the last... So the investiture controversy, if you ask Wikipedia, it ends with something called the Wormser Concordat. This is some meeting, some agreement that happened in Worms, which is kind of in Henry's home turf, near Speyer and all that areas. This is the official end of the investiture controversy. There is now... It's still not resolved for generations, for like 100 years? No. But for three generations, and Henry II, Henry III, somewhere in there, for generations now, Henry's father had to go crawling on his knees to Italy. And now we have, you know, various Henrys have tried different tactics, from, you know, groveling on their knees in hair shirts to leading armies to Rome and calling their, you know, naming their own popes. Nothing has worked. And now this pope that you just mentioned, Galatius II, he dies. And now we have Calix II. So now the new pope and Henry V both decide, okay, it's time to... It's time to figure something out, okay? It threatened to escalate again, 1121. And
yes, because Adalbert, the one from the prism, got an important job from the Pope. He got a papal legate, and Henry decided on a military campaign against Adalbert, and the Archbishop himself mobilized a large army to defend Mainz, especially from the Saxony, which were against Henry V. And so both armies faced each other in Mainz.
Yeah.
And once more, it was the princes of both armies who began negotiations and urged the emperor to make peace and reconciliation with the pope.
Finally, once and for all, stop the intergenerational.
Yes.
We did do a whole episode on the history of the whole investiture controversy as a topic itself. With Steve Guerra from the History of Papacy was on the show, and you can get more about that and those popes on the history of the papacy when he gets to that time in history. So definitely go check that out. It's like A to Z history.com, something like that. He's also an Agora podcast member. So there's a lot more content on that there. We kind of want to move on because finally we get to, but there's this, two documents. On the imperial side, it's the Heinrichianum and the papal Calixtinum, which is super creative. So that's, you know, it's Henry and Calixt, Heinrich in German. So it's like, you know, so it's like if every tweet I tweet should be called a Travisianum. And you write Judetinums. Super creative words. But with those two documents, that was kind of the result of the Wormser Concordat, and the investiture controversy was over. 1122. Yay!
Whoa.
Everybody go home now. Click, beep, beep, beep. Well, so that's, yeah.
You should say what was this about?
Yeah.
What?
The magic, there's this magic ring that makes you a bishop. No, but so investiture is, you know, so symbolically, investiture is simply who can name a bishop. Symbolically, though, in the Middle Ages, this was all done with like ritual and pomp and circumstance, and especially like you had these rings and scepters that, you know, you would give a bishopric ring to a bishop, and that, you know, who could give these rings to bishops, that all had, you know, that was now legalized as a pope. An emperor could not do that. Only a pope could do that. That is very important. Like this does kind of change the future. It definitely changes the future of the church, but
yes,
also the relationship of Germany with Rome and Germany and the Vatican and Germany and Italy and all those different things.
And the relation of religion and state.
Yes. Which was different. That's so weird that we're talking. This is a whole podcast about this thing, investiture controversy, and it's totally different if you're talking about France or England or Spain. Well, Spain was weird at this time, but France or England, because those are also or Norman Italy, because those are also Catholic countries under the Pope, but they don't march off to Italy every generation to be crowned emperor. You know, they just crown them in Paris. So, you know, at Notre Dame, so or in England at Westminster or something. So it's just really weird that what's wrong with these German emperors that they always have to cross the Alps. And but this changes here, whatever that dynamic is for the last hundreds of years. And it's been changing. It's not the same. Right now, we're at 1122. It's not the same as in 800 when Charles the Great, Charlemagne, was crowned emperor in the year 800, you know, at Christmas in Rome. This is 300 years later, and it's a totally different situation, totally different dynamic. Bishops have a lot of control in Germany. They had zero under Charlemagne. Charlemagne was a complete, you know, ruler. He had all the property and everything that he gave away. Otto the First also had much more direct control, and he gave a lot of land to bishops, and they became more and more powerful, and now they became very powerful. So yeah,
oh yes,
now we see another change. And in a couple episodes, I think it'll be good to have one episode just about the process of how they elected Holy Roman Emperors and how that changed over time. Because that's another dynamic of, you know, who, because we're about to see the next emperor. Lothar is a very democratic sort of, well, if you're a nobleman, if you're a Kurfürst, but they don't just elect the children of the Salians or who's the nearest relative like they would in England, that line of succession. But he's elected in a, you know, kind of democratic way, kind of like the way a pope is elected, maybe is more like that from a college of cardinals, but that changes over time. So we'll look at that too, and it's changing. Yes. It's very different than the first Franks, and or even Otto's time. So let's see.
A great cliffhanger, but yeah, I think we should still say to our listeners what was happening, what was the Wormser Concordat about. In the future, there should be made a distinction between the secular goods and powers of the bishop and the spirituals.
It's kind of the idea of separation of church and state.
Yes.
But different, but yeah, it is that. So we also had this idea before. We'll talk about this probably in the same episode of like what makes, you know, why is the Holy Roman Emperor? I mean, we've just mentioned this before, that there's that weird triangle of there's the church, there's the king or emperor, and they all have their certain duties. And Otto's also defined this more, the Saxon dynasties. And then the third part of that triangle is like the peasantry, the farmers, the everybody else. And that was one philosophical idea, okay? But the Wormser Concordat also defines that further, saying here's real economic power, and bishops lose it in this regard, and the emperor loses this power in this regard. Like, you can no longer name bishops, that's losing a power. And both sides win, and both sides lose.
Yes.
And, yeah, the real winner, I think I said on when I was on Steve Guerra's show, I said the real winner here is probably the Pope. I think in the future, it seems like the Pope just has a little bit more control, or he has a little bit more control over his own bishops in Germany, because the bishop in Mainz, he's loyal to the emperor, not the Pope in Rome.
Oh, yes.
So how is that possible that the Pope, he's the head of the Catholic Church, but not really everybody's personal boss now? More so. It's still not, you know, absolute power, because, you know, it's still a very complicated relationship, but it's a separation of that, the imperial's job and the pope's job and the bishop's job, as far as the diocese level, the city level, and all that kind of thing. It's still not separate, because there's still some bishops that elect emperors, you know. The Pope still has to crown the emperor. So it's still mixed up and complicated and blurry. But yeah, this was one step in how it changes in the evolution of everything, of that relationship.
The emperor's job was to give the secular goods and powers to the bishop, and he was allowed to be there during the ceremony. But the bishop handed over the spiritual authority to the new bishop, and so this was divided in two parts. And the emperor, I think, he had the right.
Yeah, if it's undecided, the emperor could step in.
Yes, to make the decision of who should become a new bishop or not.
Okay, so if it's, so if there's a contested, that makes sense. So he still had a role to play, but more separate than before.
Yes, less powerful than before.
Yeah. No, Henry, Henry, he doesn't live that long. It's kind of interesting to see, or to think about what would have happened. Henry promised, okay, so he married his daughter off to England. He then promised Henry I that he would step into French wars in Normandy. But he dies before that happens. So he's preparing to move off to France, to Normandy rather, in 1124, but he dies. Now, so he does not have a male heir. So, and he was about to move off to Normandy, but he ends up dying at the age of 39 in Utrecht. And on his deathbed, he wants to make sure that his wife, everything is okay, you know, for his. Now, he has no heir. Remember, he just has the daughter that he married off to England. And actually, on his deathbed, he wants all his property to go to the Hohenstaufen, the Staufen Frederick.
Yes.
If that's going to happen immediately, we'll see in the next episode. Spoiler, no, it won't. Next episode is called Lothar the Third. But there's this weird, so Henry can't decide between Utrecht and so all the Henrys, all the Salians are buried in Speyer, in the Speyer Cathedral. But Henry's bones are too, but his entrails are in Utrecht still. That's weird. But that's probably because he was still excommunicated when he died, just like his father. Wait, was he excommunicated? Yeah. What about the Wormser Concordat? Okay, I guess he just died too early. But Matilda handed over the imperial insignia to the Archbishop of Mainz, and she returns to England in 1126. And there's the Staufer Frederick II, and there's Lothar, who, you know, now there's I guess we should end it at this cliffhanger that there's this diet on the 24th of August, 1125, and Staufer was deemed to be a favorite, but the princes do something interesting, the dukes, because they pick this old 50-year-old person with no heir. And I think they do that because he's more harmless. I don't know. I just think it's fascinating. But to figure out exactly what happens and why, wait till next time on Lothar III on the History of Germany podcast.
Because there was an Adalbert of Mainz, an archbishop, who was still angry about Henry V. And he wanted no Staufer on the throne.
So he didn't like the Staufer either. Okay, yeah.
No, I think I'm not pretty sure if the point was that he don't like the Staufer, but he did not like Henry V, and Henry V wanted to be a Staufer.
Yeah.
The new emperor, and so he was for supported another candidate. Yes.
Whatever the emperor says, he picks the other one.
Yes, yes.
We'll find out more next time. Don't forget, there is an Arabic version of this show. I think there's like 3 episodes now in Arabic. So go find the link to the Arabic version on podcastnik.com. And if you are, so the reason I'm saying this is that we have no way of marketing the Arabic version. So the reason we make a big deal of this every show is please, please do tell the world, tell everybody you know, if you know somebody that speaks Arabic and wants to learn about German history, tell them there is an Arabic version of the History of Germany podcast called Tarikh Alemania. And it's probably not, it's on iTunes, but maybe not findable, but we'll have a link to it on iTunes, a link to the iTunes version from podcastnik.com, and a link to the Twitter, there's a Twitter feed, which is at @HG_Arabic. And you can follow us on Twitter at Germany Podcast, or me personally at Podcastnik, or Judit personally at @Meet_Judit. We're all on Twitter, and just spread the word about the Arabic version, because we have no way of really doing that. We have no way of marketing it. So just tell everybody you know, send them to podcastnik.com, tell them to follow us on Twitter and all that stuff. Get the word out. Help us spread the word. This is done by a Syrian refugee in Egypt for Syrian refugees in Germany. So we just really want to support him, help him, help us. So please, please help us. Please help us spread the word about the Arabic version. And what else? What else is going on, Judit?
Oh, for today, I think nothing more. Or
I think we got everything.
Yeah.
I feel like not. But well, Merry Christmas! It's the 23rd of December. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, and what else is winter solstice and Festivus.
Happy holiday, yeah,
and Saturnalia if you're a Roman citizen.
Frohe Weihnachten, if you understand German.
Und guten Rutsch.
Of course.
And have a Merry Christmas and a good slide. It's not what we say, but that's what Germans say. They say and a good slide into the new year.
What would you say?
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Oh.
Good slide. Good slide, everybody.
Totally sense.
All right. Good slide. Bye. Good slide. I'm sorry. I just like saying good slide because it makes no sense. Absolut nicht.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.